Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome here to our second hour in Circles of Change. It's always a pleasure to have in-studio guests, which I've got two coming up. First, Jared McKinley from the new Edible Baja Arizona magazine. I've got the third edition. It's hefty. I love it. It's going right on my coffee table. Thanks so much for joining us, Jared.
Thank you.
Very good. And also, although we didn't include it in this introduction, he also has a radio background, so I'm ready to turn the microphone over to you in due course. Let me introduce Jared. He's a botanist, horticulturalist, urban homesteader, and now associate publisher for Edible Baja Arizona. Jared's past careers in his over 20 years now based in Tucson include having been ranch manager for integrative medicine expert Andrew Weil, executive producer and founder of Po House Productions, which is a pop culture art collaborative, a massage therapist at Mirval, and also owner of a plant nursery. It was as though his journey through bankruptcy, though, that's resulted in his turning to raising his own food out of need and likewise disproving conventional myths around the way, blogging about that experience, and then during a music festival in Austin, picking up a copy of Austin Edible that set him then up for this next phase of his career. And then, seemingly out of nowhere, although I suggest that you got the planets to send him your way, Doug Biggers, who's the co-founder of the Tucson Weekly and the founder of the nonprofit Rialto Theater Foundation, called Jared out of the blue and said, hey, you want to start a business together. So here we are, just two issues out, and now the third in front of me. It's becoming now one of the strongest of the 80 edibles in the U.S., with over 30,000 distributions. So pay attention, Arizona, and congratulations, Jared.
Thank you.
Well, that journey of the phone call that Doug gave, what was that day like?
Well, I've actually known Doug for quite a while. It was out of the blue in that he wanted to start a business, but mm-hmm. we knew each other. I had with Pow House Productions, we used to do. It's funny, by the way, that you call it Po House, because we used to joke and call it Po House because we never made any money.
Is that right?
But what we did accomplish is I used to throw parties for a living. That was one of my past
That's
careers.
That's a good fun role.
And that was just post the bankruptcy. After I went through bankruptcy, I was like, screw it, I'm going to do whatever I want. And so I was like, I'm going to throw parties for a living. And so we threw all locally sourced parties. So, not just food can be locally sourced, but talent in general. Mm-hmm. And we filled the Rialto, which is a 1,400 capacity theater. And not all the shows, filled the theater, but many of them did. And everyone was very surprised that we were able to do that. But anyway, that's how I got to know Doug, because he was running it. And I had done some projects with him before. But he called me out of the blue and he said, hey, I love your blogging. And I used to write for Zocalo magazine and he was, I think at the time thinking, and of course he's a publisher, so he's probably always thinking about publishing. But at the time that he called me, he was like, maybe we should do some kind of, consulting business together. And I was like, at this time I had been trying to work on this magazine. And so I told him, hey, let's do this. And, of course, right away, he just took off running with it.
He hit right to his sweet spot.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It was so natural for him. And so, that's history.
So I'm having you tell me the story a little bit, one step forward, one step back. But mm-hmm. also the fact you took some time and went to this music festival in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I want her listeners who perhaps themselves are saying, what's next for me? Is it might be right in front of you, but you aren't seeing it because you keep looking to the right or to the left instead of front.
Yeah.
So the idea you were in Austin for music and you walked away with food.
Well, I've always been obsessed with gardening. I wasn't always a foodie. Actually, I grew up poor, so my family wasn't very, very steady. I didn't have a good food background, but I was a gardener, and in my adulthood, I started growing tomatoes. I tell this story a lot, but I started growing tomatoes and I grew them really well. And then I started having anxiety about, oh no, I don't want to waste them. And so I started, you know, preserving them, sun drying them, even getting into fermentation. So then my garden pulled me into the kitchen. But so that was already going on by the time I had gone to this music festival, and I had been blogging about my gardening. So like I said, I had been, you know, not doing very well financially. And I went to feeding myself out of need. But
it was interesting, you told me also in your notes that you also kind of broke the conventional myths, because many people feel, well, that's a much more expensive way to live.
Oh, it's such a lie. Yeah. And I've been in the, you know, gardening world for a long time, and even all gardeners, a lot of them say to themselves, oh, well, if you grow a tomato, it's 10 times more expensive than the store. There's a couple of things I'll say to that. Number one, stop buying crap. You know, buy your seed, and compost at home. You know, and if you're composting, you don't really need to buy fertilizer. And then I would have my friends deliver manure, you know, to the house. And so, if you have a friend who has horses, by the way, they always need to get rid of horse poo. So I ended up growing my food, and not only that, but the quality of it, when you pull it from your backyard, it spent a lot less time on a truck.
So what did your garden look like at that time when you were doing it out of need? You had a variety of products.
I had a big yard. I was living in Barrio Anita, and the good thing about Barrio Anita is it's set right between the train tracks and the freeway. And it's a Mexican neighborhood predominantly. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of barking dogs and stuff. And it was great because I could be, no one cared about what I was doing. I had roosters, you know, which are illegal. I had beehives. I ended up with goats. I mean, my neighbors thought I was crazy, but they didn't care. I mean, if you don't care about the guy...
You were part of the local color.
Yeah. If you don't care about the guy down the street playing Norteño until 5 in the morning, you don't care about my rooster. So it was...
And the thought that you would start blogging about your experience then again, was it anything in mind to say I could publish this at some point in time, or just the spirit of your writing just had to go somewhere?
There were two things that made me realize that I should start a magazine. One was when I started numbering the people were following higher than Powhouse, and Powhouse was in the paper all the time. I mean, we got a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. And so when I noticed that this blog, I was just writing. I wasn't trying, you know, I was just writing, you know, doing what I do. I garden and I write. And the followers, there were a lot of followers. So I right away started thinking about print. And I've always wanted to. I never had any experience in this before, but I've always wanted to be in print and in publishing. So then when I went to Austin for South by Southwest and I happened upon Edible, I was like, this magazine's beautiful. And mainly was, you know, Edible Austin's one of the best ones. It's run by people who are designers. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty.
Sure.
But I liked the ads. That's the weird thing. I don't like ads. I am not the guy that I don't read my junk mail. I'm not into that kind of thing. But when you opened up the Edible there, it was like, oh, it's a plant nursery you want to go to, and the restaurant and the farmers. And so I realized, like, I am their target audience.
Mm-hmm,
and
right.
And that most people actually kind of enjoy even the ads. So that's, I didn't think I could do Edible because I didn't have any money. So I started on my own thing. It's called Artisan Arts, and I was just looking into printing when Doug called me. And, you know, it was a sobering reality. It was like, oh, I'm not going to be able to print very many. So I thought I'd be mostly online. You know, I was trying to figure that out. And that's when Doug had called me. So
there you go. And by the way, of course, we have a copy of Edible Baja, Arizona. So it's edibleBaja.com. So you can see the downloadable version that way, but also available on the newsstands. And then also.
You're one of the first people to see this, by the way.
Copy,
until
yes,
2 o'clock today, we're going to be over at the Mission Garden at the base of A Mountain. And so that's the first time you can actually get it. It's not online yet. We'll put it online early this week.
This week, but the first two are out there, as well as the opportunity to subscribe for those who'd like it home delivered as well.
Absolutely.
So really, there's a whole huge community behind doing this, though.
Yeah.
Not just you and Doug and your immediate team, but the contributors, some 150-odd people, isn't
there? We have so many. Yeah, this magazine, you know, I've been getting a lot of congratulations lately, and I'm just one small part of this. We have Gary Nabhan on our board, too, if you know him. We pulled him in on this because he had been wanting to do edible as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Gary has always about 100 projects going on he's trying to execute, so when we approached him, he was very happy for us to take it on. So, but he's our—he likes to call himself the weird uncle. But he's our editorial consultant.
Absolutely wonderful. Yeah. And then you also, you've got, of course, some 150 some odd advertisers.
Yeah,
that are contributing to it.
Yeah.
Is
that's
this
a nice
one,
way.
This
to...
one, did you have to go and beat the bushes for this, or once word got on the street, they were coming your way? Or some of these.
Oh, I worked pretty hard getting those ads.
I bet you did.
But definitely people were, I mean, there were a lot of people who came to me too. So I would say it's like 50-50. But I'm very ambitious with this in terms of, you know, we have actually, our edible has grown faster, I think, than any of the other edibles, even faster than New York or Boston. And I think Tucson's a sleeping dragon. A lot of people don't realize how much is happening in southern Arizona. The farming, the wineries, the ranches, and particularly with this local food movement going on. And we happen to live in an area that people don't realize the wealth of this area. They see it as a desert, but they don't realize the soil is very good here, and growing season's long. And
well, any of us who've moved from other parts of the country, like my husband and I, and our friends said to us back east, oh, this is great. You're going to be able to cut your landscaping bills absolutely to a bare minimum. Oh, yeah, right. Within about 6 months, you say, no, we're about 2X, because if you don't tend to it, you're going to have mesquite trees that'll fall over because haven't been trimmed, or certainly because of the incredible sunshine that just flourishes.
Our landscape doesn't sleep half the year like it does everywhere else.
That's a good point. So, indeed, I've got the table of contents open in front of me for this third edition of Edible Baja Arizona. And, indeed, it is about food, but it's also about everything that comes with the food, such as a special article on the grapes of the Sonoran Desert.
Right, or the tool article. It's really about culture. I mean, but everyone eats. And I really like to think about how we're reaching everyone because everybody does eat, and
let alone that community is something that he's still hungry for, pun intended. There you go. Yeah, that with houses no longer having front porches and sidewalks disappearing and so on, that there's something universal about the meal.
Yeah. We also happen to live in an area that has an amazing food tradition. Like, I'm from New York. Well, I grew up in New York and I was born in Oregon, but I can't really think about New York's food traditions. Like, I mean, they have great food. I mean, it's an international site, but
as far as what their own authentic ones are, you don't know. Whereas you come here,
we got cactus and we got
peppers,
mesquite, and chiltepines. I mean, we have such a food tradition here. And it's incredible. And especially, when the cover here, and also if you look in here, there's a photo essay with recipes by Amy Schwemm, who, pretty much is cooking from what her family taught her. I mean, it's all the moles and everything. It's such an amazing tradition, and the food is so good. And it's not self-consciously healthy. It's healthy because it's real. It's just real ingredients. It's not food out of a box. And I think my biggest thing about food is trying to get people off of food out of a box. You should be able to identify the ingredients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Well, so indeed, you know, you said that this magazine is about culture. This magazine is about the food shed, as it's called, for Arizona in particular, we've got to pull upon, but changing our eating and diet and our own habits in the mix.
And I also like to say that it should be fun. You know, I know too many people who are well-intentioned, but making their eating miserable experiences by attributing too many rules. I really think you need to enjoy your food, and I think that's going to make people healthier than anything, is just really getting back into food and cooking it and engaging with the food, whether it's from, you know, in the garden or in the kitchen, fermenting, you know. I've got into since my whole thing with food with the tomatoes. Mm-hmm. I've gotten into beer making and I make kefir every day, or kefir. Sorry, some people call it kefir. But I do a lot of home fermentation, and it's fun. I do it because it's fun, not because it's like, you know, I have this like philosophy or, you know, it's about fun. It's about enjoying the experience.
So, you know, it's obvious to some of us that, of course, we all love to eat, but it's one thing to take it from love to eat to now being a chef, or being one who really is staying true to the natural forms of the land, of what you go by and what mm-hmm. you put in your mouth. Mm-hmm. So was there some other influence along the way that was a wake-up call? Was it a health-related thing that opened your eyes, or such a glorious experience at a restaurant or a friend that kind of said, bingo, I've got to do this?
Yeah, I think I would be disingenuous if I would not mention that I think there's a political thing here, too. And the political thing isn't left or right, really. It's mm-hmm. for me, it's just a local thing, and I really believe in that businesses should still be run by people, and so small business is very important to me. And I think the biggest thing, my biggest problem is seeing, you know, these companies that produce our food, they're so big that they cannot pay attention to detail, mm-hmm. and that's why our food's getting dangerous, because it's because it's run by profit. You know, it's about pleasing shareholders. It's not about producing healthy food, and so and in solving problems that have nothing to do with food, but have to do with moving the food and preserving it on the shelf.
You recognize there's some foods here that are grown locally in Arizona, but to get them from where they're grown to our table, they go to Chicago and then to distribution in Memphis, and then
right.
you know, and it was picked prematurely, so somehow it ripens in the box before
like durum wheat. We grow a lot of durum wheat in Arizona. You know, Arizona is the third largest producing agriculture state. We produce a lot of food here. The durum wheat goes to a mill, gigantic mills, that the smallest amount they'll take is 2 train truck fulls of grain. Then they mill it, and then it goes to Italy, and then Italy makes pasta out of it, and then we buy it back. And I look at these boxes, $1.29 for pasta, and I'm like, how can this be? Like, how can this be only $1.29 when it's gone through all that traveling
exactly.
and all the work and talent, you know? And how can it be that good for you when it's that far away from you, too? So, not to disparage the work of farmers in Arizona, you know, it's just the system that they were raised in, but I would like to see us improve things, you know.
Sure. And I think the other piece of it is, I think the consciousness that you folks from Edible Baja, Arizona are dedicated to, and you personally as well, it's kind of an interesting manifestation. I watch, our children, teens, ones in college, that the only thing they watch on television live is the Food Channel. It's very interesting. Now, they watch a lot of TV, but it's on their time, on their content, you know, through their uh-huh. laptops. But there's something about that magic of community, and that's the other thing you are bringing forward here, is the community of Arizona, particularly a state that's been hit so hard economically in the last mm-hmm. 5 to 8 years, that there's a whole nother subculture and opportunity and goodness that's coming out. And we just talked to our former guest about dealing with problems, but this is about capturing challenges.
Or seeing potential,
right?
Like the Arizona wine industry, you know, about 10 years ago, they were producing, you know, often horrendous wine, but now they're actually, you know, a lot of the producers are getting international attention, and we could be the next Oregon. It's more than likely, it's inevitable.
That's sweet. Well, so Jared, if you look at your time now that you're not necessarily, I bet, in the garden as much as you'd like to, or perhaps at the PC writing as much as you'd like, because you're out going to events this afternoon for your third edition, you're out stumping to go get additional advertisers and so on, how are you keeping the sense of things that really bring you joy throughout all this rapid pace of change?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I am trying to be in the garden, but I recently moved into a condo and I don't have a yard. My bees are at Doug's house, chickens as well. My girlfriend Katie and I have started a garden in a community garden. So we have a plot there. I eat out a lot. And I do get to, I mean, it's been both good and bad. I do get to write less, although I do contribute to this magazine. When I first thought about doing this, I thought I'd be writing a lot more, and I found myself selling ads, which is really a weird thing. I have no experience in sales, especially selling ads. I never in a million years thought I would do it or enjoy it, and I actually do enjoy it.
And my guess is if I really could deconstruct your prior existence prior to now, you had a lot of experience in selling and ads, but it wasn't called that.
Yeah, that's okay. True. Yeah, it was marketing. Yeah,
we were marketing.
Sure.
I bet you your parents even said that. Oh, yeah, he was the kid that always could. But you just don't know. Well, you don't know what, how it shows up in a new way for you.
Yeah.
So what's the plans and dreams for Edible?
Well, I want it to be... I want it to grow, of course, and there's we obviously the fulcrum is the print product, but I'm working on videos and and our online media. The webpage is just a shadow of what it's going to be. But we've been so dedicated to the print version, getting that settled, that we haven't had enough time. It's been an afterthought right now, the online stuff. That's important. So, but the video, I think video will really draw people into our subject matter.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, and just the color and the voices that are behind each piece of the subject matter, of course.
Yeah.
So give us a shout out. Who are some of the people you'd like to perhaps acknowledge here today as key contributors? Obviously, Doug.
Yeah, I mentioned Gary Nabhan, and then our managing editor, Megan, Megan Kimball, who has been amazing, and Serena Tang, whose hand has been in every single page. She's our designer. Those are the people who have really made this thing work really well. And then we have a couple other salespeople too, who sell ads. So there's Kenny Stewart, Magic Kenny, if you know him. He's Tucson's only certified sommelier and working magician.
Don't you love it?
He's a character.
But how fun to get this creative epicenter. But it also plays back to, I'm sure, some of the other things I mentioned in the introduction of other things you've done. So the other community of people you've hung with and been with and done things with.
Yeah.
Coming together, too.
Both throwing parties and, you know, I was president of Native Plant Society for a while, and that's come into play, and doing botanical research, and I mean, yeah, it's everything that I used to do is come together in this project. Like I've drawn upon all those experiences.
And who would have known? Because probably at some point, someone or there was a voice in your head saying, "Can't I land on anything stable?" But little did you realize you were establishing your own sculpted PhD in. And who knows, maybe this isn't about Edible Baja, Arizona. It's about what might be around the corner next for you,
yeah.
Whenever that might happen.
Yeah, you never know. I always stay open to that, too.
Yeah.
That's great. I'll be doing this for a while, I'm sure.
Well, you're having too much fun. I can see that. Your face is all lit up about this.
Oh, I enjoy this very much, yeah.
To steal your way. But my guess is still, though, you got to get back in the garden.
Yes. Actually, the biggest thing right now is I want to get a place maybe on the west side where I can have peacocks.
Peacocks?
Yeah, okay. And you know, other animals, too. But the peacock is, it's noisy, so that's the determining factor.
There you go. So it's the energy. It's the kinesthetic experience with Jared McKinley here for his activities. So, Jared, you mentioned that today you've got an event and you've got the third day. How can our listeners get a hold of a copy?
Head down to Mission Garden. It's at the base of A Mountain. And if you go on Edible Baja Arizona, all spelled out, .com, we have there's a little map on how to get there. It's pretty easy, but it's a big, big garden. It's actually one of the oldest agriculture sites in the country. It's about 4,000 years that people have been gardening or growing food there. So it's got a long history, and they got about 4 acres, about 1 acre is planted out. And we're going to have food trucks there. We're going to have Dos Cabezas wine. We're going to have Dragoon Brewery. The Chinese Cultural Center is going to have food. Iskashita has a group that's going to be producing food.
Which, of course, is our immigrants that are reusing anything that others would throw away. That's a wonderful nonprofit. They've been here on the show.
Yeah. They're Barbaros. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they're great.
Wonderful. Well, great. Well, congratulations again. So, again, you're a man that doesn't stand still, but might I ask the question, how do you think you've changed the most by getting involved in really a movement around Edible Arizona? Where are you personally now?
I've gone through some big changes in the last 6 months. I say the biggest thing is organization. Mm-hmm. And because I'm a spazzy guy and I'm a bohemian. You know, I like to have fun and drink and. But it's funny, I find myself as having to be a leader and having to, make sure that everything gets done. I'm not, you know, very good with finances, and I'm finding myself doing, you know, becoming very, you know, at least good at paying
conversing.
Attention to all that. Yeah.
Well, and I think also knowing when to engage others. So that's a support team of 150 some odd people around. So again,
yeah.
Jared McKinley, congratulations. EdibleBajaArizona.com. We'll look forward to tracking the progress, and thank you for my copy.
Thanks for having me here.
My pleasure. Have a great Saturday.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.